and welcome to episode 399 of the Thinking LSAT podcast. I'm Nathan Fox. With me is Ben Olson. We are the co-founders of LSATdemon.com and the LSAT Demon Daily podcast. As always, you can be LSAT famous. Just share news and ask questions via our website, thinkinglsat.com. This show is going to air on Monday, April 24th, which means that tomorrow, April 25th, is the deadline to register for the June LSAT. If your practice tests indicate you're ready, you should register. If your practice tests indicate that you're not ready, you should not register. If you haven't been taking practice tests, you should definitely not register. If you are registered for June, but you're not ready, you can push it. No fee to push it to a future date as long as you do that before the registration deadline. So it's decision time for a lot of people about whether they want to take the June LSAT or not. And that should be driven entirely by your practice test scores, nothing else. I don't care what you're trying to do as far as like force something into a certain cycle or whatever. If you're not happy with your practice test, then there's you have no business registering for that test. Thursday, May 11th, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to be teaching a free class called Got LSAT Swagger. I'm not sure exactly what's going to be on that agenda yet, but the idea there is that part of the reason why I have been able to be successful on standardized tests is that I think I'm going to do well. I think I might do some things to make me think I'm going to do well. So we're going to talk for that class again, Thursday, May 11th, 7 p.m. Eastern. It's a free class. We're going to talk about how you might be able to find your LSAT swagger. All you need is a free LSAT Demon account. Just go to LSATdemon.com and sign up for a free account, or go to LSAT.link/Nathan if you want to see all my free classes.
You know, I think that's just a general life strategy, right? Be confident in what you're attempting to do.
Confidence, yeah. I mean, it's like... they say it for, you know, if you're going to try to ask somebody out, If you believe that they have a chance of saying yes, then you are, you know, halfway there. If you think it's not going to work, then it's maybe not going to work. So you've got to find ways to convince yourself that the endeavors you are undertaking are going to be successful ones.
Yeah, overconfidence can hurt you too, but I think it's like slightly above neutral, right? It's like, okay, I can do this. I realize that there's some potential weaknesses here, but I can do it, and let's go and give it a whirl. Yeah.
Yeah. I find myself doing things where I believe I can do it. I kick ass sometimes on certain stupid trivia games, especially if it's multiple choice. Because I won't look at the answers while everybody else is looking at the answers. I'll like close my eyes and I'll think about the question and I'll listen for like just little kind of echoes of like, well, do I know anything about this at all? If I had to guess, what would I guess? And then I'll look at the answers. And it's little things like that where you're just you're priming yourself to recognize the answer when you see it. You're open to the possibility that you actually do know the answer. And especially on a multiple choice test, I think it's dangerous to just, you know, go straight into the wrong answers, because the wrong answers are there to confuse you. They're chosen specifically because they would be good wrong answers. Anyway, lots more of that on Thursday, May 11th, if you want to come to that free class. Top of the agenda today, we have an email here from Caleb.
Hey, Ben and Nathan. This past week, I took the April LSAT, my first official attempt. It felt exactly like another practice test to me, and I honestly enjoyed the experience. Thanks for encouraging us to think of it that way. Leading up to this test, I'd been doing quite a bit of drilling in logic games, and I felt really good about my ability to solve any game thrown at me. The only time I ever get questions wrong in LG these days is if I make a silly mistake of some sort with reading the question, but almost never because I simply missed something. Having confidence in my abilities for this section was big for me in taking this test. During my test, I had two RC sections, reading comps. They were okay, but I had a realization while working through them. There's no reason I can't just be as confident in RC as I am in LG. The answers are just as available to me because all the answers are in the passage. It really just comes down to how well I retain what I read. I don't think retention.
It's not. That's the wrong issue. Wrong word choice there. I'm going to say Caleb didn't mean retain. I think Caleb meant understand.
Well, the thing about understanding and engaging with the passage is that retention becomes very easy at that point.
How do you understand it if you didn't retain some of it? Right. But it's it's not about memorization. Right. You can memorize shit without actually understanding it.
Yeah.
You can memorize things that don't have any inherent logic or meaning. Right. You know, you can remember a phone number from an old rock and roll song, or you can remember, you know, the alphabet. That doesn't have any inherent logic. That's just memorization. And that's what I think most people mean when they're thinking about retention. So, yeah, I don't think that Caleb really meant retention there. I think Caleb means if you read it for understanding and you actually understand one sentence and then you understand another sentence and you understand the way those sentences might bear on one another, then I think that's what Caleb actually meant by retention. But
yeah, I mean, I do want to clarify something here, and that is when you try to understand a sentence and you actually come to understand it, what it becomes is a set of ideas. And ideas are exponentially easier to retain or remember than words listed in a sentence.
Yeah, what's the thought there? We're not memorizing, like, the words that the exact specific words that they used might not even matter. What do they want?
Yeah.
What are they trying to sell you on? And you can use synonyms when you tell me what they're trying to sell you on. You can use synonyms in the way you understand it. It's not memorization. It's comprehension. Totally different things.
Well, and also in so many cases, the long ass sentence that they're conveying some idea with is way more complicated and heavy than the underlying idea. And once you understand it and translate it, you're like, oh, okay. So you don't think this plan's going to work. Got it.
Yeah.
That concept is way easier to retain and thus remember when you're going through the answers. Anyways, Caleb continues, I know this isn't news to you. You actively teach this mindset, but making this connection while working to the test and feeling frustrated that I couldn't remember something from the passage brought the clarity I needed. Now, in preparation for the June test, I'll be drilling RC with the same goals as I had with LG. Perfection and confidence. There's no reason I can't get to the point where if I read something, I remember it. It's a function of exercising my mind till doing it is second nature, no differently than how I achieve that with logic games. Thanks for pushing me to approach this test head on rather than resorting to tricks. The LSAT can't stop me, Caleb. Hey, Caleb, nice. I'm glad that you're pushing this mindset even further, right? Life is constantly learning something and then learning how, oh, wait, I'm only executing it 70% of the way that I could. And then you learn again, you could go further and further. But it does seem like Caleb keeps coming back to this idea of remembering. And Caleb, I think you need to shift your focus more to understanding.
Yeah.
I think you understand that, but on some level, you still keep referring to your problem as, oh, I couldn't remember what was in the passage. That's not going to happen to you. When you understand what's being said, you translate it into real ideas that make sense to you. And they're usually simpler than the way they're conveyed in the passage. And three, you engage with that, right? Yeah. You're like, what do you think? Is that stupid? Makes sense? What? And then it'll be very easy to remember.
That's how we understand it, is we engage with it. Caleb, in that last or not almost very end sentence there, said, there's no reason I can't get to the point where if I read something, I remember it. And there's definitely a disconnect there in Caleb's process. I like what I'm hearing as far as Caleb's work ethic, and you know, Caleb sounds like they're getting a little bit of swagger, which is fantastic. But if you think it's a separate thing to read it and then remember it, you're just, it doesn't sound like you're actually comprehending. You're not actually grappling with the meaning of it. You're not actually engaging with it. You're not actually personalizing it. I mean, what do you think about it?
Yeah.
You just read it. Don't try to remember it. Instead, react to it. What do you think about it? Is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? Is this true in real life? Is this contrary to real life? Does this go against everything you've ever learned? Or is this exactly something you've been hearing for your entire life? Are they making an argument? If they're making an argument, are they making a good argument or are they making a bad argument? Like, you got to wake the fuck up. It's not just reading and then it's a separate process of, well, I've got to make sure that I can remember all that so that I can regurgitate it on a test. That's what you did in a bunch of shitty high school and college classes. This is much more about real comprehension, means that you're going to read it and you're going to feel some sort of a way about it. You're going to think something about it. And when you have those thoughts and those feelings, then you're not going to have any problem remembering it because you've internalized it. You're reacting to it.
You know, what's funny is yesterday I had that free reading comp class that we had been talking about on the podcast.
Yeah.
And one of the questions asked, which one of the following things is something that the author of the passage attributed to Marcuse? Marcuse was one of the theorists being talked about in the passage. And the most tempting wrong answer was something that the author did not attribute to Marcuse. It's something that the author inferred from Marcuse's claims, right? But the funny thing was, as I read the passage, when the author inferred that from Marcuse's claims, I objected. I was like, I don't think Marcuse is saying that. And I don't think that follows
right
from what Marcuse said.
Right.
And so I clearly had this beef with the author on that point. The most tempting wrong answer in one of the questions was something that a lot of people thought the author was saying that Marcuse said. And I said, no, it's something that the author inferred from Marcuse's claims. And it's not like as I was reading the passage, I'm like, well, they're probably going to ask about whether or not this was a claim from Marcuse or not. It's just part of active reading.
Right. Active reading is when you see that the author is maybe putting words in Marcuse's mouth, you spring to Marcuse's defense right there in the moment. And you go,
yeah,
wait, nah. Marcuse said these other things that you've told me Marcuse said.
Yeah.
This is you trying to extrapolate from what Marcuse said. And if Marcuse didn't necessarily say that, then that's just you saying that. And then sure enough, they ask a question where there's a tempting wrong answer that, you know, leads to that. Yeah, you making that mistake. It's just because you didn't engage with it enough in the first place. It's certainly not about remembering, right? Like, if,
well,
Caleb,
in fact,
like,
if you remembered
that was in the passage. That's answer.
Like, it's almost verbatim. It's verbatim from the passage. It's just the way it was presented. Yeah. It's not a claim that's attributed to Marcuse. Anyways, that happens all the time. I mean, I remember an example you were giving of this really obscure fact that the passage threw in there about boating or something. I can't remember, a river or something. And everybody was upset because one of the questions was about this obscure fact. But as you had read the passage, you were like, what the fuck? Why are you mentioning that? And it's that reaction that makes it so easy for you to remember when, I think it was like the last question of the passage too, right? So people are somewhat distant from the passage at that point, and they're like, hey, why the hell is the LSAT cheating here and asking a question about some dumb side comment? And it's like, yeah, but if you're engaged, you're going to have reactions to that kind of shit and then very easily remember it because it's the thing you took issue with. Anyways.
Yeah, because you felt some kind of way about it.
Yeah.
That's what reading comprehension really is. Hey, congratulations. You had a big group for that free reading comp class yesterday.
Yeah.
Is it too late for people who missed it, or is there a recording that people can watch?
No, there's a recording. They can definitely go to lsatdemon.com/classes. If you don't have a Demon free account, you can create one and then just search for my name. You'll find it. It's an RC class. It was on April 17th. 2023.
Probably just scroll because it's right there. It's going to be the most recent one, right? If you go to lsatdemon.com/classes and you're signed in, you're going to see all of the classes that you have access to. and you're probably going to see recorded classes for like months and years, even if you just signed up today. So LSATdemon.com, sign up for a free account. There's so much help there for free. You really have no excuse if you're not taking advantage of all of those free classes. Hope they're useful to you. Next email is from Connor. It says, should I retest if I had an issue during the LSAT? Hi, Ben and Nathan. My name is Connor and I'm a Demon student. I just took the April LSAT and had a proctor issue during the exam. These come up from time to time. We hear about all of them, right? Anytime anybody's proctor ever fucks up, we hear it. So it sounds like there are more proctor U issues than there actually are. But Connor had one of those problems.
Sure.
During intermission, Connor says, I checked back in well before the time was up. After doing so, I was stuck in the, quote, waiting room for over an hour, unable to get any help from my proctor to resume the test, even though I asked multiple times. Finally, a different proctor entered the password so I could continue. This kind of threw my focus in the next section. And what is normally a 2.5 hour exam became a 4 hour exam for me. I already filed a complaint with the LSAC and adopted to have my exam reviewed to see if I could retake it. My question is, do you two think it would be beneficial to retake the exam without knowing my score? I'd like to know how I did, but I would also like to put this largest part of the application process behind me. Oh boy. For reference on where my abilities are, I've been scoring in the low 170s on practice exams. Thanks again, Connor.
I already had an answer to this question before you read the email. The question was, should I retest if I had an issue during the LSAT? And you don't even need the last part of that question. Should I retest? The presumption is yes. Right? There's no harm in retaking the official test if you're ready for the one you just took. So the real question is, why are you not retaking? Why not take a shot at a higher score? Right?
I would go a step further and say you have no business taking the April test if you didn't already just plan on taking June anyway.
Yep.
Connor, please do not fall into the trap of hoping so bad that this is going to be the one and you're going to be done with this process and letting, because it just happens all the time that people decide that they're going to be one and done, or they decide that the next one is going to be their last one. And then they put too much pressure on the one day of the test. I noticed that Connor is making a lot of excuses here, right? It kind of threw my focus.
Yeah.
Really? Why? Because you could have just sat there and meditated for an hour. It was normally a 2.5 hour exam, but it became a 4 hour exam. So, why does that matter?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to be a lawyer. You're going to be working 12-hour days. So this was one third of a working day for you as a lawyer.
Yeah.
And by the way, you're sitting in a probably comfortable chair in a climate-controlled environment. Why does it matter that it was 4 hours instead of 2.5 hours? So, you know, when we hear, and I'm not doubting that Proctor U fucked you, and I get it that can, you know, interrupt your process or whatever, but it wouldn't interrupt my process. And that's like because of the LSAT swagger thing that we were talking about at the top of the show. You know, if it happened to me, I'd be sitting there going, oh, well, this happens to a lot of people. And yeah. I bet it really fucks those people up.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. And, you know, maybe I'm going to get a free retake out of this. But why is it? It doesn't have to fuck me up on the actual performance on the questions that I'm going to see later on in the exam. Like when it restarts, I still have to answer one question at a time. I'm still going to be given exactly the same amount of time that I had in the first place. Why does this have to be any kind of problem at all? I bet Connor is interested in taking the immediate free retake. I have a feeling that that's the question that Connor really intended to ask here.
Mm.
So put our earlier answer aside, which Ben and I agree 100%, you should be taking June. I mean, unless you absolutely knocked it out of the park here, you have to take the June test because you've got practice tests in the low 170s, which means you've probably got a 175 within your range, which means even if you do get a 170 on the April test, we think you're crazy for not taking it again in June to get a 175.
Or even a 172 or what? Right, I mean, that's astronomical. Yeah.
If one LSAT point is worth $10,000 in scholarships, which it is, you're nuts for not taking it again. As far as the free retake is concerned, you know, they're probably going to give you the option. If they determine that their error was egregious enough, they're going to give you the option to cancel that test and retake. You know, they schedule in advance now. They schedule a retake date in advance. So they're probably already telling Connor what day you can retake it.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer is, it sounds like you should probably do that free retake. Yeah. Because you don't think you did your best. Well, only your best one's going to count. So if you are convinced that you, you know, didn't crack 170s on this, then yeah, I think you should take that free retake. And in any case, you should definitely be planning to take June, unless you really knocked it out of the park here. You know, if you got a 176 plus, then fine, don't take it. You know, you're done. But there's a lesson there for all listeners and students that if you focus too much on any one test date, that can just be a recipe for disaster.
I want to say a little bit more about that. I mean, it's kind of top of mind for me because I'm reading The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. And he talks a lot about the margin of safety, which is basically when you have a budget or any sort of financial plan, you want to build in a margin of safety because no plan goes exactly according to plan. Right? Like if you have $500 in income and you have $500 in expenses, well, good luck. Now you need everything to go exactly according to plan.
All your way, right, according to your budget. I mean, yeah. Similar analogy. You technically don't have to be at your gate until, you know, 10 seconds before the door closes if you're trying to fly, right?
Yep. Yep.
And so, you know, you might arrive at security while, you know, your plane could be almost done boarding. And so you could cut it as close as you want to cut it. You could definitely arrive at the very last minute. And, you know, half the time the flight's delayed and you feel like a genius. But the other half of the time the flight's on time and you're not, because anything happens to you.
The TSA line's a little longer than usual at that time of day.
TSA pre is just closed. I had that happen to me the other day. And you forgot something at home. So you were 5 minutes away from the airport and you had to drive back in the other direction to go get your ID. Yeah. Any number of things can happen, and they do happen. And that seems kind of like what Connor's trying to do there with that just, you know, one and done mindset.
Yeah, like let's do exactly what's needed and nothing more. And everyone, like you said, if you're going to take April, you should be signed up for June. That's your margin of safety at a minimum. Yeah.
In a legal context, it has direct application because good lawyers do not do the bare minimum.
They don't just do the trial at hand. They're also anticipating a potential appeal.
Absolutely.
And how do you not fuck yourself in trial by saying a bunch of shit that's going to immediately end your case on appeal, right? Like,
right. Right. And right. So, and you don't like you look at your client and you've got one reason why your client should win.
And hey, so look, I'm really confident in this thing. And this judge is going to go
put
with
in
it.
Your brief. You know? This is just this. Here's the one reason why I'm not guilty. And instead, it needs to be like, well, I definitely didn't do it. And even if I did do it, it wasn't my fault. And even if it was my fault, you didn't suffer any damages. And even if you did suffer damages, you know, you don't have standing to bring this. Like, you've got to make every possible case because you just your first or second or third one might not win.
Yeah.
And that's the people that you're up against as you compete for seats and scholarship dollars in law school. Those are the people that you're up against. You're up against people who are going to take it three times this cycle and five times once they've crossed the cycle reset boundary. And you're going to be competing against people who had multiple shots at it and only their high score counts. You really just, what did he say? He said, I would like to put this largest part of the application process behind me. That's true for everybody. nobody wants to stay in LSAT purgatory forever, but you got to be willing to go the long haul. When you go in and file a motion for summary judgment, you're hoping that the case is going to get dismissed. But you also have to be preparing for the possibility that your brilliant motion is not going to be granted.
Hey, I want to say one more thing that's okay. To back up what you were saying about this. You said, okay, I want my case to win for this reason, but even if, and it's that exact wording, even if that's not good enough, here's my next reason. And even if that's not good enough, here's my next reason. That is one, totally legit strategy. Two, used by the best advocates in the country. And so I'm just confirming that what you said is exactly true. When I was working for Ross Guberman, he wrote the book Point Made, How to Write Like the Nation's Top Advocates. And one of the chapters was entirely dedicated to how the best advocates title their briefs. And their title, each separate argument is exactly like that. And it's simple stuff, but it's say, hey, when you're making your argument, use this phrase, even if. I mean, it seems like a no-brainer once you are aware of it, but new advocates, you know, they don't know or they don't realize how to structure things. And that's exactly how you structure it. You start with your strongest argument, but you're like, hey, even if that doesn't work, here, this will work. Or even if that doesn't work, this will work. And at some point, the judge is likely to stop. And if they shut down all of your arguments, well, fine. You had a losing case.
Yeah. And like the best lawyers are going to sometimes win real bad cases.
Yep.
You know, and they're going to always win good cases. You want a lawyer. You want a lawyer who doesn't necessarily believe you, I think. You know, you want a lawyer who's like, well, sure. That's a great case. If that's your story, awesome. Yeah, perfect. Uh-huh. Yep. That's definitely going to be part of our argument.
Yep.
But also, what if you're lying? You know, like I want to win. I even if my client is a total asshole and is lying to me, I still want to win because I care about the case. I care about my legal record, not justice or whatever. You know, you're supposed to be just a jealous advocate on behalf of your client. And that means that even if you're client is wrong or lying or whatever, you could still go in and try to win the case, you know, by exhausting all available efforts. You want the lawyer who's just going to win at all costs, basically.
Yep.
Not the lawyer who like, oh, you know, they're super sympathetic and they're like, oh yeah, well, this is no brainer. Slam dunk. Of course you deserve to win. That's a losing lawyer.
Yeah.
Okay. Next email is from Laura. Why don't you take it?
Subject is happy with in-person LSAT. Hey guys, exclamation point. I just wanted to write in and let you know that I'm super happy to have an in-person option for the LSAT. Exclamation point. I took the February test and I hated the live proctor system. Finding a place that fit their requirements and having to show them my turned off phone that I had already put away was a time waste. And getting connected to the software was a pain and took over 40 minutes. I took my 10-minute break, came back ready to start, and had to wait 20 more minutes for my proctor to be ready. Is everybody impatient these days?
Hey, man. I was a peek behind the curtain. I was out in Virginia visiting Ben this last week. And Ben, you were talking to me about how your kids are watching YouTube shorts.
Yeah.
Where they're just endlessly scrolling videos and they might only watch like 2 seconds of it and they're on to the next and then they're on to the next and then they're on to the next. You said that that's a competitor, I guess, of TikTok. I don't look at any of that shit.
Yep.
I was like scared. I couldn't believe it when I quickly like looked at the YouTube app and looked at shorts and I started watching. I was like, oh my God, is that what this is what's happening to everybody right now? I mean, Jesus, if that's what you are used to, then
10 minutes seems like an eternity.
10 minutes, 20 minutes is just an eternity.
Yeah, it's crazy because my kids, you know, we have a lot of restrictions on screen time and they don't love it. But I can tell you exactly what happens when their screen time ends. There's about 10 minutes of complaining and saying, I'm bored, I don't have anything to do, blah, blah, blah. And then, I don't know, it's like 20 minutes, 30 minutes later, they're off playing outside, laughing, having so much fun. And I just have to push through that like withdrawal period, right? And I think we're all affected by this on some level. Who was talking about this? Sam Harris was saying, yeah, today in line, you know, you're standing in line at the grocery store. It wasn't that long ago where you had to stand there. Now everybody instantly gets out their phone. You're instantly consuming content or even generating content, right? I'm responding to emails.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's no downtime. Anyways, it's messing with us. But Laura continues, this totally messed with my mindset and made me more stressed. Then having to wait a while to find out if my test had been flagged for something during the recording was nerve-wracking. Overall, I hated the online remote proctor system and made sure LSAC knew it. I was very pleased to see an in-person option returning. Thanks for the pod and the demon! Exclamation point. We had a couple other comments from our Demon Daily episode on that topic. Braden says, LSAC loves to give heart attacks on Friday mornings. I think this is a great option for those that don't have the environment or resources to put themselves in the most successful position. However, I agree that most will probably stay remote. Praise the demon. Lots of exclamation points. Owen says, I study by myself at home. That's the way I want to make the real thing. I want to take the real thing.
Yeah, if you've got a quiet place with reliable internet, you should, I think, definitely take it at home. I can't see how going and taking it in an unfamiliar environment is going to help anybody. If you don't have a quiet place, for all paid subscribers to the Demon, we did our after party last week, Saturday night. And I had a small handful of people come show up and tell me stories from the test. There were some Proctor U problems. And when I was asking people about the option to take remotely versus the option to take in person, there were, I think it's looking like some minority, significant minority, 15 to 20% maybe of test takers seem like they might want to go take advantage of this option.
Sure.
I wouldn't doubt that it'll be smoother. I think it'll be administered by a computer program.
That's all set up for this.
So it should probably not have these delays. Also, for the people who are really good at the LSAT, it just doesn't matter. The delays are not going to bother someone who is regularly scoring in the 170s. You're just going to sit there and meditate for a little bit. I mean, this is yet another reason why people should try to do a little bit of mindfulness. We have some of it built into the Demon for Demon subscribers. There's more of that to come, by the way. I just think it can really be a superpower. I took two flights yesterday. You know, I was in airports. I was on transportation. I had the smoothest possible. It was the easiest possible day. It was no problem at all. I meditated a little bit. It was great. It's awesome. It's like it just makes time fly. You feel like you're doing something totally productive. It makes you much easier to deal with all manner of irritations and distractions. I think most of these issues can just go away if people get better control of their mental game.
You know, one benefit that I always find myself getting from meditation is, ironically, in most cases, it seems like meditation is directing me to let everything go. But by clearing the slate, it makes my long to-do list. It makes the things on my long to-do list that are actually going to move the needle, that actually matter, rise to the top. It surprises me how much I can still get caught up in the day-to-day or the stupid stuff that doesn't matter. Then I go take a 10-minute meditation. I'm not explicitly thinking about that at all. In fact, being directed not to think about that, like let it go, focus on your breathing, focus on whatever. And then it's like the most important thing kind of percolates to the top. And it's like, that's what I need to do. So it's immensely valuable in terms of time. Like a lot of people, I think, say, wait, I don't have 10 minutes. I got to get all this shit done. That is probably a misperception of reality. And so when you take those 10 minutes, if it allows you to then really come back and hit the things that really matter, well, then it was worth every second that you spent doing that. It's like the LSAT, you know, you spend time and bring up your score. It's worth all that effort because it just has such a dramatic impact down the road.
Yeah. For me, the benefit doesn't come as much. Well, the meditating itself is super relaxing and I instantly, you know, feel calmer when I do it. Mm-hmm. But the big learning comes when you're not meditating, when you catch yourself. So
sure.
For me,
yeah. Awareness of the, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All I do when I meditate is I try to focus on a thing. So frequently my breath, sometimes background sounds, maybe I'll use a meditation bell. You could focus on a certain like words. There's a bunch of different ways that you could meditate, but for me, they're all
anything,
the same.
Anything right. That comes into consciousness, pain,
focus,
light.
Well, choose a thing. Right. Yeah. And focus on that thing. It could be the feeling of your butt in the chair or your feeling of your hands on your lap or whatever. But you're going to try to stay with that experience and only think about that experience. And the point is to notice how often you're distracted from that experience. Your mind is constantly trying to solve problems, which includes creating problems. It's just like, what about this? What about this other thing? Hey, you got to think about this. Oh, here's this, you know, what's for dinner? You know, and it's just like your mind is awesome, right? It's like just incredibly powerful and awesome in the literal definition of the word, right? It's like kind of scary how powerful your mind actually is. And the fact that you're like thinking about booking a hotel room for a wedding at the same time that you're supposed to be trying to work on an LSAT problem, right? We can fix that by practicing directing our attention. So when I meditate, I get distracted 100 times, 1,000 times. And that's the whole point of it, is that I'm just noticing when I get distracted and then I'm bringing myself back to the thing that I've decided I'm going to pay attention to for this short amount of time that I'm doing this meditation. On the LSAT, you hopefully will be able to catch yourself when you're daydreaming. Catch yourself when you're getting caught up in scary thoughts, right? Oh, if I don't get the score I need to get on this test, I'm going to have to take it again. That's going to be a hassle. It's going to cost me $210. It's going to take another 3 months. I'm never going to get into the law school I want to get myself into. And, you know, by practicing meditation when you're not doing the LSAT, then the idea is that you're going to be able to nip that type of thing in the bud. You're never going to totally avoid it. But you're going to get better at noticing when your attention has fallen off so that you can then just calmly bring your attention back to the thing that you're supposed to be doing.
And that's key there too, calmly, right? A lot of times people, when they first start, they realize they're distracted. And that itself, that realization leads to frustration. And it's like, right. No, that's okay.
Think about what you do want, not what you don't want when you're meditating, right? So it's not like you're trying to keep distractions out. That's not what you're doing. You're trying to focus on your breath or your sounds or your physical sensation or whatever it is that you've decided to pay attention to. The guy on Calm, Jeff Warren, I think his name is, he calls it a home base. So you're paying attention to your home base and then you will get distracted. And the game is, how quickly can you notice that you got distracted and return to your home base?
The crazy thing too is your mind is not constrained by space time. So if you're out in left field, you can instantly get back to home. It's not like you have to run back. You can just say whoop and come immediately back. It's crazy what you can learn.
I noticed that with my meditation practice that when I might take weeks or months off sometimes, right? I like meditation. I think it's good for me. I want to do it daily, but I don't. I fall off. I lose my attention.
Yeah.
But when I do it just once, I'm instantly back where I was. Mm-hmm. Right? You're either directing your focus or you're not. Right. You're either choosing what to pay attention to or you're just along for the ride.
Yep.
And your mind is going to go everywhere. Right. In space time.
Yep.
But you notice that you're on Neptune, and then you just go, oh, wait a second. Nah, I'm coming back to the thing I want to pay attention to right now.
Or you're fine with being on Neptune and you say, hey, my mind brought me here, and this is something I do want to address. But that's, it's a conscious awareness of what is happening as opposed to unconscious, right? And just like you said, going along for the ride and not even aware of what you're aware of.
Both modes are incredibly useful, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be, I mean, your mind solves problems in the shower, right?
Yeah.
While you're thinking about something totally different, your mind is capable of just solving these other problems and doing all kinds of amazing things. But there are times where you want to choose what you're going to be thinking about.
Yep.
And instead of being carried away on this nonstop train of, it's like multidimensional thoughts, you know, overlapping in just every possible different configuration. And instead of that, you're like, whoa, I got to take all this crazy horsepower that my brain does have, and I'm going to channel it, right? I'm going to focus it all onto one sentence of the law school admission test or whatever it is that you're choosing to work on in that moment.
Yep.
And I think you might find that your Proctor U problems go away if you do that. Because it's like a delay or a break just becomes an opportunity to meditate.
But, well, you know, just any moment, really, you, as you get better and better, you're in the middle of something. It's precisely like, okay, let me focus on what's creating this anxiety or stress or discomfort or whatever. And that puts space between you and that cause or source of angst. And that alone is a power, right? Like it's definitely something worth investing in.
Yeah, especially because it costs nothing. And I mean, it just takes such a small, crazy small amount of time.
Yeah.
I do it myself. There's, you know, days and days where I didn't find the time to meditate, which is so insane because I definitely had time and I absolutely wasted most of that day. Like, yeah. I know I did. You know, you just do all sorts of stupid shit. Go get coffee again, or go, you know, you just do things that they don't move any kind of needle at all. And if you think you're super hyper busy and you don't have time for meditation, then yeah, you're the person who definitely needs it the most.
Yes. 100%.
Okay. That was a long.
Thank you, digression. Laura.
Thanks, Laura. Next one is from E about online learning. Hey, Ben and Nathan, thank you for the guidance and content. It is immensely helpful. I am in the final class of my undergraduate degree with the graduation ceremony coming up in June. As I have been active duty military for almost 11 years, my degree has been completely online and completed over the course of about 7 years. My questions are, one, I'm concerned that my academic credibility will be harmed since I did not attend a traditional brick and mortar institution. Does the fact that my degree is from an entirely online institution influence my admittance chances? Ben, you want to answer?
No. The thing that matters is your GPA and your LSAT score. Where that comes from is of very little significance.
Yeah, it matters less because they don't report that type of thing on their 509 report. So, you know, most schools are going to look at a 4.0 and they're going to be excited about it. Now, if they're comparing your 4.0 to a 4.0 from MIT, then yeah, they might prefer the MIT 4.0. But they're not going to prefer an MIT 3.0 to your online 4.0.
Yeah. All things being equal, it matters, but
all things aren't equal.
Rarely are, right?
Number two, do law schools care how long it took me to complete the degree?
No.
Yeah, that's another thing that is not listed on the 509 report. They do not ever have to represent that, you know, to the world. It's not like, well, our median GPA is 3.65 with an average graduation time of 4.5 years or something like that. That's not a stat. So why would they ever give a shit? And you were active duty military for 11 years, which, by the way, law schools love. Military folk definitely outperform in their from their numbers.
Yeah, you had to work hard in a way that a lot of people don't.
You were okay with someone screaming at you at 4 a.m. to do push-ups.
Yeah.
And, you know, law schools look at that and they're like, perfect. You might make it in big law. Perfect.
You'll be able to respond to partners yelling as well.
Yeah. You'll be fine with someone owning your ass 24/7. Okay. 3, furthermore, my grades suffered early on due to personal life problems, but I have retaken the classes that were affected and am projected to graduate with a 3.7 ish GPA. I got some bad news for you there. E, unless you can get those previous grades taken off of your transcript entirely, when you get your LSAC GPA, it's probably going to go down a little bit because of these retakes. Not as much as if you hadn't retaken the class, but basically LSAC is going to count both of those grades, the F and the A, and your school might be disregarding the F and just counting the A. LSAC's not going to do that, so that's going to be not great for you. Should I write an addendum addressing this as well as why the overall timeline is so long?
Okay, don't address why the overall timeline is so long. It's not important. And most people, when they start talking in addendums, they end up hurting themselves. You can and probably should address the grade increase, but again, we're going to stick to facts here. So you say something like, my last 2 years in school, I got a 3 point whatever it actually is. This better reflects my academic potential. Done. That's it. It's one sentence, two sentences. No. Well, so in my personal life, I encountered blah, yeah. blah, blah. Nope. You're hurting yourself. I know the story makes sense to you and you feel, of course, very sympathetic to whatever happened to you, but other people will not hear it that way. So just don't talk about it.
It depends on how you execute it. I want to push back a tiny bit on what you said. I feel like there might be a way that you can roll in the 7 years as part of a, like, what if the story sounds something like, I did my first 3 years of undergrad while I was doing very intensive work as an active duty military member.
Well, then it could be implied that your low GPA is from that. Mm-hmm. But not explicitly stated.
It's all about the execution, right? It's how we yeah. deliver these facts. Those are facts. And if you marshal the facts in the right way, they might start to look good. So you could allow the reader to infer that the active duty military thing is, you know, it is why it took you a long time to graduate. But you could also maybe possibly get away with, like, over my time, you have to find a way that's like, you're going to edit and edit and edit and edit this, but
yeah,
something like, as I got closer to graduation or as I got past those first few years, I had learned how to balance the demands of the military with the demands of my college, you know, years. And that's why I had a 4.0 during those last 3 years.
Well, what's critical there is you're bringing in facts right. that are good for you.
Right.
And ironically, not presenting them as good for you. When you right. try to sell a fact, sometimes it immediately puts up a defense wall by the reader. But if you're presenting a fact as a, you know, introductory or side note, then it's much easier for that fact to slip in as a positive thing, right? It's like, oh, whereas if you're trying to sell, like, oh, and look at this, you know, I did poorly because I was in the military. It's kind of like, okay.
Yeah. I wasn't making any conclusions at all.
Yes, exactly.
I wasn't making any excuses. I was just arranging the facts in such a way that it's pretty easy to interpret them in a favorable light.
Yeah. You know, we get these questions about addendums all the time. People need to actually draft them and then send them in.
Yeah, that would be way better.
Uh-huh. Because we can tell you, you know, oh yeah, it sounds like... you know how to not sound like a fool, or, and you're pretty close, or yeah, you're way off. Cut it down to these two sentences. I don't know. It's hard in the abstract, but in yeah. general, people spill the beans and hurt themselves.
P.S. says E. I didn't start out with the demon, unfortunately, and have taken a number of practice tests using other mediums. Is it possible now, or will it be possible to input data for practice tests so the demon can have more data and learn more about how to drill and help me prepare?
I wouldn't worry about it. just the demon's going to start learning the second you start doing drilling, time sections, practice tests. Putting in data from previous practice tests is going to give you marginal benefit. You can do it. You can start a test and then go back and edit it, put in the answers that you did before. But to me, it just seems like a waste of time.
Yeah. Instead, you should just move forward with new stuff and review the best you can using the demon resources. Okay. Next email is going to be from Greg. This is Pearls versus Turds for episode 399. In 400 episodes of The Demon, we've done this now close to 125 times. The scoreboard's not looking good. 25 pearls, 72 turds, 26 ties. And Greg has something to that he wants us to weigh in on.
Okay. Hi, guys. I'm the same guy that suggested the police driving tactic of, quote, drive as slow as possible as... No, sorry. Well, here's the tactic. Slow as possible, fast as necessary. Okay. For a method by which to proceed through the LSAT. You guys didn't agree, and now I see how it doesn't make sense. We have another acronym in police driving called SIPDE. It stands for search, identify, predict, decide, execute.
Phrasing. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
They might want to rethink the last one.
execute.
Fuck. Okay.
Jeez.
Yeah. All right. It's a lot.
I immediately feel like a ping of anxiety. Like
totally. Well, just like I see a ping of anxiety every time I see a cop. Sorry, Greg. I'm sure you're a good guy. Cops scare the shit out of me. They carry weapons that can be used to execute. Okay, so cops are thinking SIPDE. Search, identify, predict, decide, execute. Ugh. So I already hate it, but what else we got?
Yeah, Greg says, I think it parallels the LSAT well in the following ways. Search the passage for every ounce of information or any flaw in the presented reasoning. Identify the question type with which you're presented.
I hate it already. No, this is a turd. Sorry, Greg. We don't just immediately go into classification of question types. That is not the second thing that we do. Definitely not.
Yeah, this is like,
and we don't do it at all.
Too
on
many
games.
Steps into search.
We don't do it at all on reading comp, and we don't do it at all on games. So no.
Yeah. Predict the answer or several possible answers.
The problem with that is that like you're putting it third, and it should be constant. Like predicting is an active exercise. Just like we were trying to get way up at the beginning of the show, we were trying to get Caleb to comprehend as he's reading and not have read, then separately retain, which I think he meant understand. If you're thinking that predict is the third thing that you do out of five, no, because I'm frequently predicting the answer when I'm like halfway through the first sentence of a logical reasoning question.
Yeah.
Or I'm predicting bottlenecks in a logic game after I notice that the same player was mentioned in the first rule and the second rule, right? I'm thinking about that connection and I'm thinking about that bottleneck, and that's part of predicting. And it happens constantly, always, not third in some acronym.
Yeah. He goes on, decide which answer is correct based on your prediction. Do people need to remember that? And then lastly, execute your selection by choosing the correct answer. I don't think people need a reminder for that either. It's quite simple, but it may be a pearl over a turd. Maybe it's at least neither.
No, it's a turd. It's not quite simple either, Greg. It's an unnecessary acronym. It's not going to help you do anything. What? You need to read that shit carefully, Greg. Like, there's no acronym. Read it. Make some connections. Not search, identify, predict, decide, execute.
Yeah.
I, Sorry, I hate it. It's just simpler than that. It's so much easier than all that.
Yeah. I think you're just trying to force it into something you already know, Greg, which, you know, we're always trying to take what we learn and see how it relates to what we already know. But yeah, just focus on understanding.
Appreciate the effort, Greg. Appreciate you listening to the show and writing in. Appreciate the Pearls versus Turd submissions, even if they're turds. Go to LSATdemon.com. Go to thinkinglsat.com and drop us a line if you want to submit something for Pearls versus Turds.
This next one is from Anonymous. The subject is, should I test before beginning to prep?
Anonymous says, hey guys, I've been listening to your podcast for a couple of weeks now, and I was wondering if I should take a practice test to see where my cold score lands, or should I just go straight to preparing?
Well, it does not matter. Do whatever also, will get you started.
Doing a cold diagnostic is the first step of preparing. I mean, it's a perfectly great first step of preparing. The first thing that you do is you do a question, or you do a section, or you do a test. If you've got 2.5 hours and you want to just do a whole test and you're not intimidated by that, which you shouldn't be, then great. Do a full test and then review the shit out of all your mistakes. Or just do one section and review the shit out of all your mistakes. Or do one question and focus on getting it right. That's what LSAT Demon drilling is built for. The easiest way to get started is to just hit drill and do one question. But if you want to do a practice test and get a cold diagnostic, that's great. And it is part of your preparation. It's not separate from your preparation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we say this over and over again, but if you haven't figured it out, the way to get better at the LSAT is simply to do an official question and then review it until you understand it. Whether that's in drilling, time sections, or tests, as you were just saying, Nathan, it does not matter. So I actually want people to do whichever one of those three things is most appealing to them, because I want you to get started. Because I don't care what medium you do it in. I just want you to do an official question and review it to the point where you understand it. And now you're moving the ball forward. So figure yourself out. If a test motivates you, you want to see what score you'd get, do it.
Anonymous continues, I plan on purchasing your live session program. We just call it Demon Live, but wasn't sure where and how to start. You just subscribe with Demon Live. Subscribe to Demon Live and come to any class. That's all you got to do. You can start any day and your month starts on that day. So, you know, 15th to the 15th or whatever, you'll have access to all of our live classes and all of our recordings of all of our live classes, and just jump in with whatever. It could just be whatever class is happening right at that time, or you could schedule out, oh, I want to take a class from Ben and I want to take a class from Nathan. And I, you know, oh, this Logic Games, Worlds class looks good, or whatever. You can pick your topics, pick your teachers. There's so much for you there, but you don't have to start at step one because it's not a test of knowledge.
Yeah. And don't get stuck with analysis paralysis. Any class is fine. If you don't like it, if you go in and you're like, whoa, I feel lost, you should ask the teacher questions. But if you feel lost, you can leave. It's Zoom. So you leave and look for a fundamentals class or something like that. All our classes are rated from beginner to moderate to advanced, and you can just try a different class.
Come late, leave early, come lurk with your camera off and just watch for a little while, or watch a recording of previous classes and see if you like how the recorded class worked before you sign up for the live class. You can use these classes in a million different ways, but really, you just show up. You can't do it wrong. Anonymous continues, I graduated with a 3.5 GPA, so I definitely understand the importance of scoring fairly high. That really makes no sense. I think Anonymous is trying to say I'm a splitter because 3.5 is not that great for top law schools, which is true. But whether you had a 3.0 or a 4.0, everybody needs the best score they can get because it's just such a powerful lever. Or wrecking ball, as we've called it previously on the show. I'm open to going to any school within the Dallas-Fort Worth area since I have a family I'd hate to uproot. Oh, shit. You're going to do way, way worse things to your family than uproot them by going to law school and becoming a lawyer.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not willing to sacrifice a small bit of inconvenience of having to move to a different place so that you can start your law career on firmer footing, then just don't even do this at all. I think it's, I get it. You've got a house, you got kids in school, you don't want to move. That's fine. And maybe you do find a unicorn perfect fit in the DFW area. But if you don't, it'd be insane to go to a lesser school for the wrong price. That's a terrible way to start your legal career. And you're going to do way, way worse things to your family by doing that than by moving them out of town.
I just did a quick search for the number of schools in that area, and I see three.
Yeah, you got to broaden your net there. I think you got to at least apply to all the schools in Texas. I understand that Texas is big, but if you're a Texan and you really want to stay in Texas, there's lots of other schools that could work. And also, why don't you just expand into other schools?
Yeah, well, we were just talking about the military,
there
right?
There are nicer places than Dallas, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, we were just talking about the military, and military families, they move every 2 years, sometimes right. more
they
often.
They just live with it and they get used to it.
It's a new environment. There's a lot of benefits that can come
absolutely.
From that too. So
I think
try
you become
it.
Way friendlier and more resilient by moving around.
Yep.
You're forced to learn how to make friends. I think you learn a lot about yourself. You learn that, you know, you're still you no matter where you go. You lose this idea that like, oh, if only I had moved to New York City, then everything would be totally different. Like, if you have moved around a lot, you realize that that's probably not the case. Being from the DFW area, SMU is considered a big thing down here. And after looking where it's ranked, I don't get it. Any thoughts? SMU is Southern Methodist University, right? Ranked 58th in the country. Southern Methodist is located in Dallas, Texas. It has a median LSAT of 164, median GPA of 3.71. It's ranked 50 something if in the country. It's Hastings, basically. You know,
it's a fine school, but you need to go for free.
Yeah, it's a mediocre law school that has to entice people with scholarships in order to go to their school. They give 96% of their students get some sort of a discount. 70% of those are less than half tuition. But 26% of the class is there on half or more scholarship. That's how they're able to attract, you know, some of those. They've got a 75th percentile that's only 1 point higher than their 50th percentile, by the way, 165. So they're a school that is, you know, struggling to maintain pretensions of being a big deal. But there's like not one person outside of the state of Texas who thinks that Southern Methodist is a big deal law school.
So I'm on lsatdemon.com/scholarships. I put in 3.5 for the GPA and a 170. And the estimator is estimating based on last year's data. So it's not perfect, but it's estimating a full tuition scholarship with those numbers. For 169, it drops to more than half. But of course, every applicant's going to be different. And it's just an estimator using old data. But hey, maybe this correspondent could go for free. In which case, I'd feel a lot better about staying in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Considered a big deal by whom? I mean, I don't understand. I don't understand why, like, you're saying in that, like, it's considered a big deal by them. if you go to their admissions office, then they're going to tell you stories about how it's a big deal. If you talk to their own 1Ls, the 1Ls are going to try to convince you that it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Any alum is going to try to convince you it's a big deal. You're just in an area where there's a lot of alums and students and faculty and staff, and there's a lot of people around there. So there's high, what do they call that in advertising? High recognition of that SMU brand, but in a very small area.
Yeah.
It probably does not open doors to big law, would be my guess. I don't think that some of the people go from SMU to big law, but it's not going to be like a shoe-in. You know, you're going to have to do really well at SMU, I think, to get into the top Dallas law firms.
Yeah.
If you're okay doing public interest work or small firms or whatever, and, you know, making a modest salary, then I'm sure that this school is perfectly fine. But if you have like giant, you know, big aspirations, then I think you need to be thinking about University of Texas, because that's the one like truly national law school in Texas is going to be U of T.
Yeah.
Or UT, I should say. Do they say U of T or UT? I don't know. Who cares? Well, Texas in Austin.
Well, here's another thing. Another thing to keep in mind, actually, even if you get a full ride to Southern Methodist, the estimator is saying you have an actual cost of $7,000, which means fees must be $7,000. Let me look at the, yep. I'm looking at the 509. Fees are $6,968. That's
the highest I've ever heard.
Yeah, I've seen higher, I think, but that is very high. Most are between 500 and 2,000. Even 2,000, I think, is a sham. We were just talking about this before the podcast started. Yeah, I was going to say,
tell the story about Maria's car.
Yeah, so she's at the dealer trying to buy this car, and they have $1,000 in dock fees. And for a second there, I thought it was referring to the taxes on the vehicle, because that's about how much it would be here in Virginia. And then I saw that, no, the taxes are a separate line. And so I'm asking them to, well, I'm on the phone somewhere else saying, hey, can you break down these dock fees? Anyways, this is a total, you know, it's just a dealership scam fees, basically.
They give you a price, but then when you actually get your invoice, it's a different number. And that's what they're going to, it's like here, they're hoping to give you a price and a scholarship and entice you and make you think that it's a good deal. But then when you get your loan package, it's for more money, because they're going to also soak you for the $7,000 in fees.
That's a crazy number. Cause really, if you got a scholarship to this school, if you take 7,000 and you add it to the 54,000, you're looking at 61,000, right? If you actually look at the cost as 61,000 and they came back to you and said, we'll give you 54, you're like, okay, so I'm not getting a full ride. I'm getting more than half, but that's what it is. Instead, it looks like a full ride. Oh man.
It's another example, by the way, of better schools actually being cheaper. The tuition at Texas.
Yep.
For resident, by the way, is $36,429. The resident at Methodist is the same as the non-resident private school charging full price to everybody, whether you are a Texan or not. I mean, it's double insane, it would seem, if you're a Texan to go to this school, because you don't get any kind of a Texas discount.
Yeah.
Whereas at University of Texas, which again is a wildly more prestigious school, you're going to pay less to go to that school.
Yeah, 17th in the nation.
And then even if we are looking at non-resident tuition at Texas, it's $54,096. The tuition at Methodist is $54,090. $6 different, interestingly. But then Methodist throws on $7,000 worth of fees and Texas has zero.
Yeah.
Texas looks pretty legit. They're like actually rolling their fees into their tuition. Thank you for doing that. Thank you. Yeah. It's fucking obnoxious to have fees, like mandatory fees, that are clearly part of the tuition.
Yeah.
And that's some bullshit there. Yeah, I don't know, man. Don't drink the Kool-Aid of SMU.
It's making me rethink how we display this information on the scholarship estimator, because Southern Methodist comes up as green. Right? It's like full tuition. And then we do note right next to it that the actual cost is 7,000, but I wouldn't say that's full tuition.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think we should probably just tack those fees onto the tuition and not play their stupid games.
Yep.
Thank you, Anonymous, for writing in. Oh, a couple airport complaints, just since you mentioned Dallas-Fort Worth. I flew through Dallas-Fort Worth on my way to DC and back both times. And on the way out, my flight from Reno was delayed. And I was on American Airlines, and they never stopped making announcements about how we're headed to our headquarters in Dallas-Fort Worth. And they were like selling it to the passengers as if it was somehow a benefit to us that we were going to Dallas-Fort Worth, the headquarters of American Airlines. Of course, my delayed flight gets into DFW and I have to make a transfer, what do I find out? My next flight is in a completely different terminal because American Airlines is so big at DFW that they have multiple terminals. So yeah, the fact that it was American Airlines headquarters actually was nothing but a bad thing for me as I run to the train, wait for 4 minutes for the train, get on the train, wait for on the train for 12 minutes. You know, I'm just constantly checking the time, looking at as the other flight is boarding. It's boarding, you know, get off, fucking run. And, oh, thank you. I'm so happy that I'm at the headquarters of American Airlines.
Can anyone help me here?
That was pretty awful. The other super shady airport thing that happened to me, I noticed yesterday I was at LaGuardia. I actually went up from DC to New York for the weekend and I was at LaGuardia Airport in Astoria, Queens, Brooklyn, New York. And I wasn't in Brooklyn. I was in Queens. But those motherfuckers in Terminal B, they had a super nice new entrance. And what happens is you come out of security and I can see that like the gates are over there, but coming out of security, I had to go the exact opposite way into a super, super nice mall. And then the path curves and 100% of all the people who came through security had to go on this detour through a mall. And it wasn't like huge, but it was, you know, it added a couple minutes to my attempt to get to the fucking gate.
Unashamed American capitalism.
Oh, isn't America just the best and worst at the same time? It's like, I'm so glad that I could, you know, if I wanted to do my damn Christmas shopping here at LaGuardia in the departure, like,
did it have duty free signs? And like, oh, it's duty free.
It wasn't even to get to the exit. It was in the entrance. So it's like 100% of the people who go through this are on their way to a flight.
Yeah.
And you're making everybody drag their carry on shit through just like, hey, buy, you know? And at the very least I'm seeing all the advertisements for all this bullshit. I did not appreciate that, LaGuardia. I mean, I see you working capitalists, but I just don't. God. So bad. Okay.
I'm sure. Yeah. They can charge more for that space. Absolutely. It's foot traffic.
They're making more money. Yeah. I mean, obviously they're just like, oh, I don't give a shit if it takes 2 more minutes to fly through LaGuardia. We're going to make money. And that's what we're here for.
Yep.
Not the best. Okay. You want to read this email from E?
Yeah. The subject is, should I give up on the LSAT after almost 2 years of study? Wow. Okay, E. Dear Ben and Nate, I spent 1 year studying with a prep tutor and spent the last 10 months studying with LSAT Demon Live. So I've spent nearly 2 years studying for the LSAT full time. My cold test score was in the low 150s 2 years ago. It's a good cold test score. Right now, I'm scoring consistently -0 or -1 in logic games, -7 in logical reasoning, and in reading comp, I don't have time to finish the third passage, but my accuracy is -1. Okay, so you're getting like -8 to -9, maybe? After having spent so much time and money studying for this test, I am seriously thinking of giving up on this test because I'm not scoring anywhere near my desired score range. One particular problem I'm experiencing is that when I'm drilling, my accuracy is almost 90%, but in a time section, it's much lower, -7. Should I take the June test as planned, take whatever score I get and apply?
No.
I'm not sure that postponing the test would do much good, thinking about how much time I've already spent studying in the past and the amount of progress I made during that time. Thank you. There is one thing I need to say, because this correspondent is focusing so much on the past. I was just listening to a podcast and the interviewee was talking about Daniel Kahneman, the author of Thinking Fast and
Thinking
Slow.
Thinking Fast and Slow. It's an excellent book. Yes.
Yes. So the interviewee, or the maybe you heard this and you can correct me, but I think it might have been on Freakonomics Radio. But anyways, the person had worked for Kahneman and helped draft chapters. And this person was surprised by the fact how easily Kahneman could take a chapter that they had worked hours and hours and hours on, refining it, and just blow it up. Just say, boom, we're going to do something different. Goodbye, chapter. And one time he asked Kahneman, why are you able to do this? Why are you able to blow things up and just start all over with a new chapter and a new focus? And he said, I wish I could quote it exactly, but something along the lines of, I do not consider sunk costs, or I'm not a sunk costs decision maker. I wish I could say how Kahneman said it, but the point is, Kahneman did not let sunk costs affect future decisions. He full-heartedly took that wisdom into heart. Yeah.
Definitely a sign of a good writer. Good writing comes from good editing, and good editing is largely cutting. And I forget what writer said it, but you have to be able to kill your darlings.
Well, I heard that from you. And when you told me before, I think you said Stephen King.
I thought that it could have been. Yep. Okay. Murder your darlings. Oh, wait. It was also reiterated by Stephen King by his book On Writing, which is an excellent book about writing. Again, Stephen King, On Writing. We've recommended it many times on the show.
Yep.
The quote from Stephen King in that book is, kill your darlings, kill your darlings. Even when it breaks your egocentric little scribbler's heart, kill your darlings. Many of you need to do that with your overwrought personal statement. Like, the fact that you've spent a lot of time working on it doesn't mean it's good. And I know you love it and you're really proud of these little nifty turns of phrase, but if they're not getting the job done, if it's not the statement that you want to submit today, then I don't care how long you spent working on it.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with whether E should keep going or quit on the LSAT journey?
Well, the question isn't E, what you've done. The question is, what can you do? And are you willing to do going forward to get the score you need to go to law school, hopefully for free or very close to free, and going to a good law school that meets your goals? Do you still want to go to law school? Do you want to do what it takes to get into the school that you need to do, or that you need to get into? Then focus on moving forward, not on what you've done.
Continue getting better at logical reasoning and reading comprehension. I'm glad you're focusing on accuracy in RC. I mean, three full passages. If you can get them all right, that's fantastic. But that's not, you shouldn't be feeling badly about that. You can score solidly in the 160s with perfect games, solid LR, and just three passages on RC. You can actually get probably pretty close to 170. Yeah. So maybe E has unreasonable expectations for what they want their LSAT to be. But yeah, we'd have to talk to you about how to move forward. I don't really think that the year spent with the tutor, the 10 months with...
It could have hurt you. That actually could have pushed you down. That definitely
could have hurt you, because there's bad tutors saying crazy, wild stuff about the LSAT. Now that you're with us...
10 months is a long time, but people have been here with us longer. You know, usually we don't recommend one-on-one tutoring, and I wouldn't even recommend it fully now. I just wonder if there's any value in meeting with one of the demon teachers for just an hour. Just like, hey, what are you doing? How are you doing it? I mean, he or she might also be able to get that in class. Just stay after, talk to us.
Logical reasoning classes and figure out why you're missing 7 in a section of LR.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you didn't mention what your accuracy is on LR. You're saying it's -7 for the section, but is that because you didn't get to them, which is okay, or is it because you're missing them, which is not okay? And anyway, you're going to get better at LR one question at a time, one mistake at a time. So what kinds of mistakes are you making? Why are you making those mistakes? How are you going to stop making those mistakes? On reading comp, it sounds like a speed thing. The way you're going to get faster on reading comp is by predicting answers. So, you know, don't just immediately start reading answer choice A. Instead, think about the question you're being asked and try to answer it independently of the answer choices.
Yeah, I want to double down on that too, because yesterday in class, there were easily two questions. I think there might have been three, but I know for sure at least two of them were the most tempting wrong answer, which I look at right after I explain the question, right? I explain the question, then I click the I, and it's like, oh, okay, here are the answer choices that were most tempting, which might be why so many of you wanted to go over this question. In both of those cases, the most tempting wrong answer was an answer choice where I read three or four words. Right. I read three or four words, crossed out the answer, and moved on. So it's one of the answer choices that I spent the least amount of time on and the right. least amount of time explaining. And now everybody's like raising their hand like, okay, I hear you. You just got rid of that answer. But I was really tempted by what? The second half of that answer. And I read it and I was like, well, I didn't even get there. So I'll go back. I'll read it. I'm like, yeah, everything about that is great. But these first four words do not work. And if you don't see that,
yeah.
then you are getting sucked into things that turn out to be legit in this case. That's not necessarily always the case. But think how much faster you would have gone if you had gotten rid of that after four answers and or four words and you would have gotten it right.
Make better predictions. If you don't have a prediction, maybe you don't even know what they asked or you don't know what the passage said about the question that they're asking. So you got to make better predictions. So that you can do what Ben did there, which is dismiss wrong answers quickly. The only place that I ever go fast on reading comp is by letting go of answers that are wrong after the first three or four words. I just get to do an easier version of the test because I can tell that that answer is going to be wrong faster than other students can tell it's going to be wrong. That's where we get to pick up time. But the way we do that is by going slowly and carefully and largely predicting the answers. Good lucky. Come talk to us in class. Love to help you decide whether you want to keep up or quit or keep going or quit. Want to read this next one from S?
I do. Before I do, I'm going to read Daniel Kahneman's quote. I found it. Daniel Kahneman says, "When I work, I have no sunk costs. I like changing my mind. Some people really don't like it, but for me, changing my mind is a thrill. It's an indication that I'm learning something."
He's a scientist. That's what scientists do.
Yeah. This next one is from S. The subject is UGPA grade appeal success. "Hey, Ben and Nathan, as I start to prepare for law school applications, I came to realize that on my college transcripts, there was a semester of a program I previously dropped that was being reflected in my cumulative GPA. This brought my GPA from a 3.9 down to a 2.7. Yeah, shit. Okay. I wrote the chair appealing these grades and requesting they be changed to an abbreviation that is not reflective in my cumulative GPA, and they insisted they couldn't."
Abbreviation?
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but maybe like a pass... fail, which would be reflective in your LSAC GPA. I hope that's not what you did. "So I took Nathan's advice, did quote lawyer shit, and dug through their policies and wrote back referencing XYZ policy that they in fact can reopen a grade appeal. Long story short, I requested a grade appeal. They denied. I persisted and then received an email from the program clerk that my transcripts had been updated and my appeal was approved." I love it. I mean, half the battle is persistence, right? They might not even have it agreed. They're just like, "We're done. We're done talking about this. This person's not going to go away. Just give them the fucking request." And this person got it. Who knows? "Writing this to give their students a simple glimpse of hope." Oh, I'm writing this to give other students a simple glimpse of hope that they too can succeed in appealing grades. I wouldn't have asked or persisted if I wasn't a listener of the podcast. Thanks for everything. Take care, S." Hey, S, I hope that your abbreviation or whatever they gave you does not end up coming back to haunt you on the LSAC GPA calculation, but maybe...
I don't see how it's going to. It sounds like there's a whole semester that was just... They say they had dropped that semester, but apparently it didn't show up as dropped. And yeah, that is fantastic. You dug through their policies and you made an appeal. That is exactly lawyer shit.
Yeah, you want to be the expert in the room. You don't want to be the person asking them, oh, do any of your policies account for this?
And they probably just need justification to do what, like, they just want to get rid of you, right? They want to dispose of you.
And they're scared, right? If they do something that their bosses are going to say, hey, why the fuck did you do that? Now they have cover. You need to give them cover. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you can't get one person to do it for you, then you just take it up the chain and you just keep going until you feel like you've exhausted all of your options. And if you don't want to do that type of hoop jumping, then you probably don't want to be a lawyer anyway.
Yep.
So I'm glad that people are getting shit changed on their transcripts. We're hearing more and more of these now.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Why not? Why not correct the record, you know, in a way that helps you?
Yep.
You're getting, you know, there's evidence on the record that is bad for you, and you're going in and getting that evidence removed from your trial.
Well, this reminds me of civil procedure and how sometimes the biggest part of a case has a lot more to do with what evidence is being admitted before the trial even begins. It's like you won or lost in procedure.
Oh, completely.
Not in the trial itself, because you got some evidence excluded, or actually you got some evidence included, and now it's like game over. That's where the actual litigation took place.
It's so wildly important that that's like why people don't testify in their own criminal trials, right? The second you testify in your own criminal trial, then they can bring in all sorts of other shit about your
character, whatever.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the fact that you, you know, did in fact used to run a church of Satan or whatever it is, you know, like that is probably not great evidence for you. And so that's why you just sit there and don't testify, even if you're totally innocent, because, you know, there's other shit that you're going to lose if it gets brought into trial.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is fantastic that you're practicing being a lawyer. This is an excellent little first baby lawyer step. I'm proud of you, S.
And even if you fail, like, that itself is a learning experience. Like, did you go overboard? Did you not advocate for yourself in the right way? It's like, learn from these failures.
Yeah. And everybody should do it. I mean, anybody who has bad shit on their transcript should give it a shot. I wonder if, I'm going back now and looking at, our military correspondent who had bad grades early on.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's some loophole there, like just some way that you could get. I think you should be digging through. If you're not happy with your GPA, I think you should be digging through your undergrad policies and trying to figure out ways that you can get.
You might be shocked. Removed.
Yeah.
Right. You might be shocked. It's like, oh, yeah, a sick. If you can document that you were sick for more than 4 days during an exam period,
that might be grounds for reopening the thing. And
yeah,
totally. Absolutely.
I mean, sometimes you read rules and you're like, let me read that again. Is that really right? Right. We deal with this in taxes and all sorts of things. It's like, you gotta be kidding me. Okay. So if I do this now, I'm going to get this thing over here.
Yep.
Okay. Doesn't make sense, but that's how rules work.
All right, last one is from Nick, and the subject is T14 and big law hurdles. Hi, Nathan and Ben. I'm currently restarting my LSAT journey. I've had struggles on LRRC that have kept me from reaching my goal score, a 174. You're probably thinking I'm close, say a 168 to 171 range. I'm not. I'm at a 157, which I canceled last October.
Wait, if you canceled, how do you know your score? Oh, score preview, maybe.
Also, that was a long ass time ago. What are we really talking about here? I'm confused already, Nick. I have blind reviewed all the way up to the high 170s, which stop doing that. That's a company that shall not be named.
Yeah.
Trying to pat you on the back for, oh, when you redid it, you were able to get a high 170s, like, you knew that you're not going to pick the same dumb answer that you picked last time, and you had unlimited time. Shocker, you can score in the high 170s. That doesn't mean jack shit. I don't know why anybody does that. That's total waste of time and completely meaningless.
Yeah.
Anyway, Nick says, but I haven't transferred it to a practice test or official exam. Yeah, no kidding, because it's totally bogus.
Yeah.
It's like, can you imagine a quiz? You're taking a multiple choice quiz, right?
At school or something? Yeah.
Yeah. And you do the quiz and you get a C on it, but then the teacher gets it back to you and says, okay, you can try again. Well, you better get close to 100% because you've already you've eliminated one of the wrong answers.
Well, not only do they say try again, they're giving you your quiz back, the one right. that you literally just filled out, and it has X's through the ones that you got wrong. I mean, that may not be exactly how this other program works, but regardless, it's
a waste of time, and it's misleading to people. You know, why can't I match my blind review scores on my new practice because you haven't seen those practice tests before.
Yeah.
You haven't read that reading comprehension passage already. Even if you don't remember what wrong answer you chose, you're getting to read it again. You're reading the whole damn thing again. You're going to see new stuff the second time you read it. Obviously, you're scoring higher.
You just got double time, basically, right?
Exactly.
There,
so. Yeah, unlimited time.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I know this comes from not understanding the material as well as I could, so I'm reaching out to see what type of help I can get to close this gap. Okay, are you an LSAT demon student or not? Because you're saying a lot of shit that is just not LSAT demon stuff.
Mm.
So LSATdemon.com, sign up for a free account at the very least. Watch all the videos, do the drilling, read the written explanations, use the ask button. So many ways that we can help you if you just get yourself a free account. Context, Nick continues, I'm 25, working full-time, and have an UGPA of 3.84. I would like to attend a T14 and go into corporate law, specifically focusing on mergers and acquisitions, private equity, IPOs, and capital markets. I currently work full-time at a Big Four accounting firm and hope to leverage this experience when applying for law school / big law internships and full-time positions. I'm 100% prepared to work as hard as possible to reach my goals. Any help would be appreciated. Nick.
You got a lot of motivation, Nick. You need to direct that toward doing individual questions and reviewing the ones that you got wrong.
You need something in the 170s if you're going to make it to this, you know, these big law dreams. Because you have worked in Big Four accounting, it sounds like you know exactly what you're getting yourself into. So, you know, you have my blessing, but you got to do better than whatever your previous LSAT prep was. I think we probably can blow your mind. But the fact that you're so focused on this weird blind review score indicates to me that you haven't yet been doing it our way at all. So I think you need to sign up for a demon account.
Yep.
Try 1 month of the live program and just come talk to us. I think that we're going to correct a lot of misconceptions and put you on a much more productive path. By the way, giant red flag that you canceled a score last October and then like you're not reporting recent practice test scores or anything. I mean, you it's not helpful to take these 6 month breaks in your studying. So hopefully you'll get on the horse with us. And really all it's going to take, we understand that you're working. I really only want one high quality hour a day. Yep. So give it a shot with LSAT Demon Live. Try it for a month. You don't have a lot to lose. You can be LSAT famous. Please ask questions or share news with us at thinkinglsat.com. If you have questions about the LSAT Demon, email help@lsatdemon.com. I think you will find that we have the best customer service you have ever experienced. Check out our other podcast, LSAT Demon Daily. That was episode 399 of the Thinking LSAT podcast. Thanks all y'all for listening. Nice knowing you. Don't pay for law school.